You're listening to Face Off, episode 58, recorded February 21st, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, we have no news and follow-ups this week, so let's get into our geek tools, which is an exciting one. So let's say you're out, and you're trying to enjoy a nice cold soda that comes in a nice glass bottle with a top on it.
It's not twist off.
Not twist off. And it's not an adult beverage because we wouldn't condone that.
No.
And you can't get the top off. What are you going to do? You don't have a bottle opener. What happens?
Well, there's various methods. You can bite it off or yeah, use like a lighter.
You try and take it off with a lighter and all of a sudden poof, the lighter pops and your eyes are burned up and you're dead. You know, you're trying to tap it on
the top breaks and you don't notice it because the foam's coming up. You put it up to your mouth and it cuts your lip.
Did that happen to you?
No.
Or someone you know? Maybe it did happen to you. Anyways, it's dangerous. This geek tool will help save you in that instance. It's called the original ring thing, and what it is a ring that is actually a bottle opener.
And it looks like a ring. And by the reviews, it works great.
Yes. It's just a little ring, and it just kind of looks like a regular ring that you put on your finger, and when you need to open a beer, you kind of put your hand up to the bottle on top of it, and
even if you don't, wear it all the time.
If you're going out to a party or something, might be fun.
Or you got it in your kitchen or something, you pull it out and people are over and you just kind of grab the beer with your hand and kind of pop it off. It looks like you just did it with your hands.
I am the Hulk.
So, you can kind of trick people out a little bit. It's kind of cool. It's kind of a novelty thing. I wouldn't expect anybody to wear this all the time.
I do.
Really?
Every day.
Every day, okay.
No, I'm joking. I don't.
But
if I was going out to an event with adult beverages, I might think about putting it on my other finger.
Definitely.
And it's only $8. So get the link from the show notes. Go buy it. It's awesome. We love it. Let us know. Actually, that's a good thing. If any of you get our geek tools or our Christmas wish list items, let us know what you think. If you like it or don't like what you got, let us know. Excited. So.
Give us a little review in the comments or something.
I like reviews. All right, let's get on to our first web app.
The first one we got is from Google called Browser Size.
So this is a big, it's one of those things that people tend to argue about a lot. What resolution should you design for? I think it was funny is I get in arguments about this at work, actually, but I think I don't like fluid layouts. I don't. I've never liked them. And if you're a content provider, you don't like them because you like to set the rules. You like to know what your content's going to look like on everyone's screen. And fluid layout is sort of another variable that you don't really need. And a lot of people, I think, choose not to.
Yeah. I would say probably 90% of my projects are centered at 960 pixels or something.
Exactly. Me too.
So, this is great, though, because this is actually aggregated data of what screen size is. And obviously mobile is coming. It's coming up big. We got things like the iPad and the Kindle can't really see a website, but we get a lot of people on the road with these little netbooks is a good example.
Totally.
Droids. You've got to keep that in mind. A lot of times people take the approach of making a mobile dot, a subdomain or something, but.
Well, so what's good about this, though, what I really like about this is you put in your website or whatever, and it'll do this browser size overlay on top of your actual website. So from your actual website, you can sort of see what percentage of people can see. What can they see using certain browser sizes? So the default example they use on the website is that if you have a donate now link that's halfway down below the fold, only 70% of your viewers are seeing that. Mm-hmm. That's 30% of people that can't see the donate now unless they scroll.
Yeah.
That's important information.
Yeah, especially if you want donations.
And what's cool about this one is it kind of goes the opposite way. Most people would say 30% of visitors can't see. But what I like is with each sort of growing layer, it tells you what percentage of people would be able to see that far out. So you know that, let's say you set a target ahead of time, I want something that 90% of people can see. Okay, well, you can look at this and you can say, I want to make sure that I want to do it at that particular width that 90% of people can see. Okay, there you go. Or are you doing it 960? According to this, if you do 960, you know, there is a significant percentage that can't see your stuff.
It's true.
It hits about 90%. It's kind of that borderline between 90 and 80%. So I think that's sort of an acceptable level for a lot of people. But also what's nice about it is, are people having long or widescreen monitors? Obviously long, or I mean wide, because you sort of see these wide bands as you go horizontally, but they tend to stay very thin vertically because people, you know, monitors are getting, you know, bigger, wider. They're widescreen as opposed to, yeah, most people don't rotate their monitors.
Interesting.
So check it out. It's a good thing, you know, something to check out. It's really quick and easy and fun. It's at browsersize.googlelabs.com.
One thing to point out, this is generalized data just across the web. You can, you know, go into your analytics and actually see what browser sizes people are using. And like you, I mean, if you're a tech site or something, you probably have different results than this.
Oh, absolutely.
Or vice versa, if, you know, so.
Yeah, so I mean.
Use it, both of them.
Yeah, another, but it is also nice in that it can just, you can quickly go, what could I see if I designed something at 1050 wide? And, and it overlays it on top of your existing website.
And these things kind of change. You know, back in the 90s or something, I think it was like 800 by 600 was like the thing to go for. And now it's like, that's pretty small.
The one thing, though, this is designed for left-justified web pages. So if you have a center-justified one, it doesn't, the overlay doesn't really quite work as well as you want.
You can kind of, yeah, right. You can kind of see what's going on, but yeah.
Totally. The next web app we want to talk about is called Aardvark, which is a very interesting little web app. What it is designed is, it's supposed to help people ask and answer questions that just don't work well via a search, right? So, and the way it does it is really cool. It's that if you are an Aardvark member, you can answer questions, or you can ask anybody, you know, you can ask questions or answer them.
So the first question is going to be who's answering my question? Is it an expert? Is it like... somebody that doesn't know anything about it? Like,
it's supposed to be experts, right? Hopefully. Right. Someone that has an answer.
Well, I mean, I think that is the whole point of the program, is it's supposed to match up people that are more likely to know the answer and ask them, as opposed to just random. So, like, if you ask a question like, where's a good place to eat in San Francisco, you're probably not going to get somebody in China answering that question.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and it tries to be, you know, smart about it. The one thing they're trying to do also is incorporate sort of, like, friends and friend networks into it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly how it does it, but so I asked the question. I said, "What is a good time tracking application?" And I got two answers that were very full of useful information. So, and I promptly told those two gentlemen, "Thank you," as well, because it's important, right?
Right.
I mean, if people are going to take the time to help you, you should help out. So,
sure.
It's kind of like Stack Overflow for regular life, you know, except for you can't mark like which is the best answer, but.
You can say yes or no, though, and I think you can...
Yeah, I can say it was... helpful. It was kind of helpful, but not really. Or no, it's helpful, not helpful to me, but could be helpful to someone else.
Or no.
And not helpful at all.
So, I mean, that helps them... It helps Aardvark to find people that are experts, because you say, I mean, if you keep asking this person about HTML and he doesn't know anything about it, they're going to say, no, this isn't helpful. No,
exactly. No. And if everybody starts saying, you know, every answer I get is very helpful, which it's going to be, because that's how I roll, but... then it knows that I'm an expert in sort of these categories, and the whole point is it kind of is smart about it. You don't have to tag a question with specific things. It kind of just knows, like, okay, so I asked about time application, right? It knows that that's sort of an application question, and it looked for people who are experts in application.
So how do you ask it questions? What are the different ways you
can
ask it?
There's all kinds of different ways. You can they have an Aardvark client for Jabber, MSN, AOL Instant Messenger, Yahoo Messenger, so you can ask questions via that and receive the answers.
That's really cool. So very helpful. You're saying I can just be in my IM and just double click on an Aardvark user name, or like
it says
Aardvark or something, and just chat to it.
Yeah, you just say, what is your question? And then also, like, what's funny is if you ask a question, it says, this question's kind of short. Do you want to add detail to it? Just put detail colon and then add detail to it, and it'll propagate that information to whoever they're asking the question to.
That is so cool. Yeah, because there's questions that just are not appropriate for a search engine. Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, this company was just acquired by Google. Who is, you know,
it makes sense.
It's filling gaps, exactly. You know, Google really strives to just know, what are people thinking? What is the information in the world, and how can we aggregate it? And so things like Twitter and stuff are really helpful, but like this is another one. This is designed to be sort of questions you can't ask in a search window and get effective answers, but now you can.
And it makes perfect sense that Google would acquire something like this.
Yeah. So check it out. It's at vark.com, the Aardvark. If you have some news, a follow-up, or web application you think we should look at, let us know by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback because we want to look at the stuff you guys want us to look at. All right, so the topic for this week is what?
Well, it's kind of a two-part thing. One is going to be we're going to create a spec. We're going to for this purpose, we're going to call it, you know, like a functional spec specification as opposed to like a technical one. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take that spec and we're going to kind of like you know, estimate time based on it. So this is going to be, you know, before you start a project, you should write a spec. It's argued that that's one of the most important things you can do to limit your risk in making a project in software.
Yeah.
And then also estimating time is super important if you're doing any project which you're kind of like freelancing for or
you're billing. You know, even if your boss is billing time and you're not directly, you know, taking it, that's time that they need to keep track of.
So we're going to talk about how to write them and what to charge.
All right. So what's a specification document?
Well, it's a document that describes the technical requirements, including procedures of which describe the requirements or when that the requirements are met. So kind of like a test unit or, you know, a test of code, totally. Kind of. But so something that says it lays out the requirements that are going to be needed for the project. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you a picture of what it's supposed to look like when it's done. Like, this should have these things. Okay. It's going to be from the user's perspective. So this is not going to be, we're going to use PHP and we're going to use array sorts and we're going to do this and that. This is more like, you know, we're going to have four pages. On these four pages, we're going to have a login box. Mm-hmm. And when the user clicks search, it should display X amount of results mm-hmm. with pages on the bottom so they can go further into the results. Something like that.
Okay.
So, you know, it's focused on screens, dialogues, menus, things like that.
Okay.
So, and we're going to talk about a little bit more about how to make them, but let's get into like why, because I mean, I think that's important.
Yeah. The why, the right? Why. The why.
You know, it's been said that, you know, failing to write a spec is the single biggest unnecessary risk you can take in software. And that was a quote from Joel Spolsky from Stack Overflow.
Oh.
Which Stack Overflow is a very popular site for programmers.
Yeah, totally. So, he knows his stuff. Those guys know their stuff.
They provide a precise view of the problem and force you and your clients to actually design something mm-hmm. as opposed to just sitting down and coding by luck.
Yeah.
Getting something by luck. You know, you're actually you're forced to design something when you make a spec. With that, I mean, it gets everybody on the same page. You don't have a coder just going out and start coding a feature that you don't need. And then he comes back and say, well, I spent 4 hours. Do I really have to delete all this code? You know, it's easier to make iterations and things in a spec as opposed to code. And you can catch errors faster.
Yeah,
so like,
totally. It's just, yeah.
So like you know, in version 2.0 of your software, you could say, well, we're going to upgrade to this file. When you click on it, it's going to automatically merge your settings from the old ones mm-hmm. or whatever. And you write that in your spec and you give it to your client and they read over it and they say, well, wait a minute. We don't like that. We want it to be backwards compatible. We don't want it to, you know, something like that. And they change it right there. Well, it's easier to delete a paragraph in Word than it is delete 4 hours of coding. Work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I mean, getting everybody on the same page is definitely a benefit to doing specs. It also paints an accurate picture of how long a project and more importantly, how much money it's going to cost to mm-hmm. create this project. If you don't do a spec, you're kind of shooting from the hip. You're saying, you know, somebody could describe it and you could say, you know, I think it's going to take 10 hours and you could be way off. It could be 40 hours or more. You might, I mean, the user might say, well, we want it to do this. And they have some things in your mind that they're not telling you and you don't quite know, you know, you don't quite know what exactly they want. And then you start working on the project and they start saying, well, I thought it would have had this and this and
scope
this.
Scope creep, right?
It's kind of like scope creep, but it's like if they would have communicated at the beginning, they would have got it all out there and you would have known about it. But since they didn't write it all down and get everybody on the same page, you don't.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it's scope creep in a way that you're operating under a set of assumptions and what you would think the scope of that feature is. And then they come in and say, well, no, this is how we wanted it to happen. And so all of a sudden, you know, not only does your shopping cart need a back end so they can manage all the, you know, stuff, but you also, you know, And it's kind of scope creeping that way, that you are assuming that it is this, the scope is this, and they're saying that, no, it's not. And it can kind of creep up on you like that.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is, if you lay everything out, you might notice something like, you know, we're using this data a lot, or this, we're using this type of pattern a lot. Maybe we could just make that like a shared library or something. Mm-hmm. And then, so you could reduce coding and duplication doing that, as opposed to start working on it and you didn't really plan ahead, and because you didn't make a spec, and you realize that you could have written this way better. Totally. You know, like that's the whole point of the spec, you know.
Yeah. You could have two guys working on basically the same thing that could be a module shared between the two chunks of programs, but since you didn't flesh it out enough, true, no one knew that duplication existed.
You know, if you don't write a spec, you don't, specs don't cover the inner workings of a program. They're more of how they're going to be implemented in the outside. I mean, we, you know, like the menus and the screens. So it is important to stay away from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how, I mean, so this is not something I'm writing by myself. This is something that I'm writing collaboratively with my client, whether the client is internal or external, right? Either way, you need a spec both times.
Yeah. So you know,
how do I go about starting this conversation? Like, what are some things that I need to make sure I figure out for my spec?
Well, you know, that's the thing about specs is you can't really make them yourself totally, unless you have a deep understanding of whatever you're working on. You kind of need to interact with a client and ask them, you know, how do you want this?
Yeah.
You know, and some of these, so I made up with some questions that are, you know, web specific, web based,
mm-hmm.
For making, you know, like a web application or something. And so some of these questions could be like, you know, what's the total number of pages?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of navigation bars or menus do you want on this? Is it more than one page design? That's kind of answered in the, you know, total number of pages. Do you need custom graphics? If so, how many?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to provide me any graphics, or do I got to find them? Do I have to buy them from a, you know, a stock image? Or,
yep.
How design intensive? Some people are, you know, want to focus more on the coding and not really do design, not get into the HTML and the CSS, and just focus on getting the back end working, and then they can go hire a designer mm-hmm. to finish that up.
Yeah.
So you need to know that. What type of text content is going to be provided? I know this is kind of a big one. It's like, I'll code something and I'll just put in like
Lorem Ipsum.
Lorem Ipsum, or like buy it, you know, start buy your product today or something, just to like a headline so that they know it's there and they can change it. And they mm-hmm. kind of, you know, oftentimes the clients will come there and be like, well, I don't want that there, fix it. It's like,
yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you know, what kind of text? If you're going to be sending out an email, you're going to send an email out on user registration, what do you want that email to say? It's not really my job to come up with copy for the email. It's like the marketing team should be doing that. You know, database driven applications, what kind of database? Do you have it set up already? Do you have hosting for it? Do you have, you know, anything mm-hmm. that goes along with that? Administration areas, do you want to be able to edit the preferences of the application?
How do you want? Do you want to do it through a text file, or do you want to do it through an administrator backface?
FTP, an admin section. Do you have the domain already purchased? Who's going to keep track of all that?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to point the server to the right areas? Hosting arrangements. Sometimes people provide hosting as part of their services. Sometimes they set them up, recommend them. So you got to kind of figure that out. And, it depends. Like, if you get on a host that doesn't have PHP and you're writing this in PHP, you know, because they go buy one.
Yeah.
Or they buy one that doesn't have SSH access and you kind of need that for whatever you're doing.
Yep.
You know, things like that. You need to get some of those questions out of the way.
Totally.
When you make a website, you want it to be indexed by search engines. So you got to kind of keep that in mind, and how important is it to their goal for that? Are they a site that's more of an information thing? When people go to their business, they kind of look it up, or is it something that they have to be found with a search engine because that's all their business?
Yeah.
So you need to know how important search engine optimization is for them. And will any training be necessary depending on how they upload products or pictures or whatever the site does? So some of the questions you can kind of get to help kick off the specification for like a web-based project.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of these questions like the number of pages and different things are very web specific.
Yeah.
But.
Like I wouldn't, yeah, I wouldn't have like a header section in my spec that says number of custom graphics needed, but you need to ask them how many custom graphics are getting. And they're like, oh, we want, you know, we have a designer that's already doing this. And then you kind of take might that information, distill it, and then put it in your spec.
Yeah. And it might kick off some more questions that they, well, yeah. They might say, well, I don't have a graphics designer. And
I didn't even think of that at all.
I didn't think of that. And then you start going down that road.
I want pretty graphics, yeah. But I don't know where to get them.
So what should every spec have?
What should every spec have?
I mean, and a spec could be in a Word document. I don't know. You could collaborate using like Google Docs or, you know, something like that. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be that fancy, but there's some things that every spec should have. Number one, and I got some of these from Joel Spolsky's got a blog on making specifications, and I got some of these from there. So
awesome.
If you want to check that article out, we'll link to it. Number one, a disclaimer stating that that it's a work in progress. Because it's kind of like the designer thing in wireframes where you get this, well, this, it avoids, the, and even when you do get it done, you can put in, like, this is done, but if you find an error, please contact me or something. This is just a statement so people don't come and say, this is way off. This is not what it, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a disclaimer saying this is a work in progress because specs are a work in progress. Things change. Mm. You know, you might have the first iteration of the program, you know, especially in Agile where you go and you add some features and mm-hmm. You're going by the spec and then you say, well, this new technology came out, you know, this NoSQL database and we want to use that instead. And you kind of have to tweak the spec. The spec is a living document. It's not just a static one-time thing that you make.
But I mean, don't you need them to sign off on it? I mean, don't you?
Yeah.
So like if you make any change, do you have to have them re-sign off or like re-say?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it depends. Like, if you're doing just one website where you flush out all the features, yes. If it's an ongoing project, then you kind of want to. It depends. Yeah. I guess it depends on the size of the project.
Yeah, okay.
If you're doing a small little website or something, it's probably just a one-time thing. You don't want them change. You don't want them adding features. I mean, it's scope creep, and that's not, you know, part of the deal. But if it's an ongoing project and it's maybe an internal project that you're working on, you're gonna have a spec that changes.
Okay.
As versions go on. I mean, yeah, you maybe just sign off on each one or something.
Okay.
An author should be listed in the spec and only one. So there should be somebody that's responsible for this, whether it be, I mean, usually the spec, if you're talking about design, is usually made by the person that's doing the work, the freelancer. Mm-hmm. In a company, sometimes companies don't, I mean, they want a collaborative thing, but it's, I mean, you want somebody that's responsible.
Someone needs to be the gatekeeper.
This yeah. Basically the gatekeeper. You can have multiple people collaborating and throwing ideas and things, but somebody should be responsible for keeping it up to date. Mm-hmm. So when it's not up to date, there's somebody to be responsible for that.
Well, or if they, like we're talking about, if they have signed off on it and you kind of get out of the spec phase, you say, okay, well, we've designed our spec. It's time to actually start working on it. And they want to go change the spec. They just can't go change it and say, look, we put it in the spec. Exactly. You know, so like someone needs to be in charge of it and say, okay, well, the spec has changed now. My estimate is going to change. My, you know, timeline is going to change. We have to figure that out.
And also by having just one author, you know where to ask questions. If you have questions about the spec, you know where to go. You don't have to, you know. Scenario. So in the spec, you should have multiple scenarios of how a user or, you know, whatever it is, if it's a peripheral.
We call them user stories, but yeah.
Yeah, a user story, like a scenario. Something that describes how a user, I mean, to the detail, like a user, like, so let's do Aardvark, you know, like, so you go to Aardvark and you're going to type in a question and you're going to click ask, and that's going to take you to a page that kind of explains a little bit about Aardvark while you're mm-hmm. waiting for your response, and then you get the response, and then maybe the user clicks this join now button, yeah. And then
the user has the ability to say that was helpful or not helpful.
Yeah, so it's like a story of how someone's going to use your software.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing every spec should have is non-goals, things that you are not going to be including, if there is things that you're not going to be including.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to include everything, you won't have any, but if there's a time where it's like, let's say you're going through the features and you say, well, you know, this feature is pretty time consuming and maybe you want to reserve that for the version 2 or whatever. Put that in the non-goals. So
yeah.
we got a firm. Someone said that they like this feature, but it's not something we're going to include in this version.
Or if it changes over time, if it was a goal at first, but it isn't, then you put it in the non-goals. That way, you won't have a client later that comes on and says, whoa, what about you know, all this functionality with Twitter? It's true. Was going to have all this social stuff. And you're like, wait, we decided to not. Yeah. And that's so part of here's non-goals. In the spec that you signed up. That you signed off
that we're
on.
We're not doing that feature. Yeah. It gets them out of the way right up front. Totally. So people's not like, well, what about this? Well, they would see that was a non-goal.
Totally.
An overview, this is, you know, kind of like the elevator thing. In one paragraph, you should be able to sum up what it is you're doing. And then you have the details. You know, you have a subsection for every screen, every menu, every, you know, feature of the project. And within that, it's totally broken down. And inside that, you could have like side notes for technical notes for the technical people and marketing notes for the marketing people. So an example of that is like the email. Like you could be talking about the email registration, and as a technical note, you could say, you know, emails should adhere to the RS, you know, the RS 282 spec or whatever the release for comments RFC spec 291 or whatever. And the marketing note would be, you know, we need the email to say, you know, be marketing. Like when a user registers for Aardvark, let's say, it should be a courteous email. You know, it should create excitement and allow that user to explore the service. Mm-hmm. So like the marketing people are going to skip over the technical notes. They're not going to care about that. So include some of those in your spec.
Yeah.
Also have open issues, although when you do, so an open issue is like, we need to consult with the marketing team and figure out what we want in this email. Do we want a link back to our site? Do we want the activation link to be an actual link or not, or something that the user has to copy and paste or whatever? Yeah. So an open issue might be, we need to have a meeting about this and figure out what we want to do about this. With that though, you got to be careful. You don't want to have too many open issues and start working on the code before you have some of those flushed out.
Yeah.
So some other tips, like it's this, and this came straight from Joel Spolsky's blog, which was make them fun to read. So for an example, the user types, this is a not fun one to read. The user types control N to create a new employee table and starts entering the names of employees. This is his fun version. Miss Piggy is poking at the keyboard with eyeliner stick because her chubby little fingers are too fat. Press the individual keys and types control N to create a new boyfriend table and types in the single record Kermit. It's it's the same, like, so this isn't like the technical aspects. This is not like we're using, you know, this feature, this PHP function to call this or whatever. These are user stories. Some people might think it's silly, and it is, but I mean, like, it provides the same information. Miss Piggy's hitting control N to add a record or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
This is not like
Jade, who is a computer, you know, fanatic, is trying to organize his time, so he goes to Aardvark and asks the question, you know, slowly puts into the box, what are some good time management applications? Jade then anxiously waits for an answer, and, you know.
Yeah, make your user stories actual stories, like, that are fun to read. It doesn't distract from the information. You're doing control N and, you know, make them fun to read. The reason is, I mean, because people don't like to read these big, long technical documents of, you know, these specs. Mm-hmm. If you want to get people to read them, you got to make them fun.
Yeah, I would say the Miss Piggy one's a little whimsical, but you know, it depends on what. Some companies have a cool culture like that, and I always like that because that's kind of the way I am.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it doesn't fit every. I mean, corporate.
You can culture. You can make it. You can make it interesting without making it non-professional
too. Yeah, you don't need. Yeah, you maybe Miss Piggy's over the top.
Yeah, but maybe, you know, an excited young teenager looking for a way to connect to his friends, you know, for Facebook isn't right. That sounds like good marketing material almost.
Mm-hmm. So with that, also, you know, write as simply as possible. Don't make it too drab and boring.
Yeah.
Review and reread your own spec several times so it doesn't get out of date and stale. That's if you're, you know, you're doing an ongoing project, totally. Not necessarily a one-time web page for somebody.
Yeah.
But even those, you should review. And I mean,
why
not?
When you're done, especially if you're done and you're sort of done with the project, look at it and see what you did and what you did wrong. Like, did you forget a feature or something that kind of came up and bit you later?
So how do we estimate time based on?
Yeah. So I got my spec, Mark, and I want to do some work. Or no, they're asking me for an estimate. How do I do that from the spec?
Well, to understand why we need to estimate time is, I mean, what we're almost always under spec. Underestimating of time. Mm-hmm. So why are we always under? And technologies required by the project have not been used. So you're getting into something that's a little over your head or you don't have much experience with. And maybe not the whole project, but maybe there's an aspect of that project that requires a certain technology that you're just not familiar with that could lead up to many, many hours of research and added time to a project. So chunks of gray areas are complete unknowns in the spec. So this is a spec that was not fully fleshed out.
Yeah. Oh, that's 2 hours, you know, a whole new, an administrative backend. That's like 2 hours. No big deal.
It's like 20. you know, watch out for those. The client wants a project estimated tomorrow or they'll go elsewhere. Sometimes people are hasty and say, you know, like some, they like, oh, I want an estimate. Well, what is it going to cost? It's like, well, I got to do a code spec and it's going to take some time and I'm going to have to email back and forth with you and your team and figure out what your needs are. And they're like, well, we just want to cite how much would it cost? Yeah. That might be a sign that you might not want to work with them or.
Yeah. A really good tip I heard from, Phil from Manifest Creative here in Bozeman. And we'll put a link to his Twitter up on the notes. Is it's something I didn't think about before, and other people have said it if you look into it, but I didn't. And he said, what I do is I do a rough, really rough spec and a really rough estimate. And I tell them that this estimate is non-binding, neither is a spec. This is just kind of from our one conversation. If you want a detailed spec, that's consulting. I'm not holding you to it or anything like that, but I'm going to have to charge you for that because it's consulting. Because if we do a good enough spec, then you should be able to take that spec to any developer. You know, and the one thing I don't want is to help you write a really detailed spec and then have you shop it off to someone else. And it also, again, it makes sure that your customer is committed because you should be able to say to that customer, if they're one that you want to work with, you should say, listen, I know it. We need to, I have to charge you for this because it's a really good, useful thing and you need to understand that.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good tip. So, I mean, so that's, you're charging your client for the spec.
Yeah, which is, I think, is a fairly foreign concept to a lot of people, a lot of programmers, because they think.
But it totally makes sense. I mean,
I got to do it beforehand. But it, you know, if you write a good enough spec, and then you give them your estimate for that spec, they should be able to say, well, can I go take this to other people and see what they say? And you should say sure, because if you gave a good estimate and someone else can do it cheaper, that's fine. That's their money lost if they can't do it, or either they're more efficient than you or something. Then they deserve that business.
Definitely. Another one that can make us be under spec is not having like previous projects to estimate or actual data on. Like
previous data points, right?
Yeah, like if you know that the last project you did, you under spec by 25 hours, you should kind of look at that and say, hey, and maybe look inside. Be like, well, it took me 4 hours extra when I told them it was only going to take 2 hours to write up the CSS.
Yeah.
From, you know, the Photoshop file or this or that. And you kind of go through it and say, I was kind of under on a lot of these things. Yeah. And then you can take that data and apply it to your new.
Yeah. I always think that styling is really easy, but it always has its hangups. I mean, there's always going to be little hangups of, oh, this CSS property didn't exactly act like I thought it would. Oh no. You know, and I always underestimate those.
Another reason you might be under spec is because you didn't write a spec, because estimating time and writing specs is not that fun.
Yeah.
You as coders or designers or whatever your thing is, you want to just jump right in and do it because that's what you love to do.
Yeah, and it's definitely not as sexy.
Writing
like
stuff is not very fun, but it will save you so much time. And these are things that you just need to do. And if you don't do them, you'll probably learn the hard way. But
okay, so then. And this is a good tip I've heard a lot, is break the chunks down into a set amount. So some people have 1 hour, some people, depending on the project, have 4 hours. Get a defined chunk of time that you have to break your estimate down into. So like, let's say if it's over 3 hours, mm-hmm. I have to break it down until it's, you know, the features are down to less than 3 hours. Because what this does is it forces you to go into it, chunk it up, and then look at the different chunks, and if you think that it's going to be more than 4 hours, then you need to look at that chunk of time
and chunk
closer and then chunk it down. And then you're like, oh man, I totally forgot that, you know, I can't do Twitter with username and password because it's a bad security policy. I'm gonna have to do it with OAuth. That's gonna take twice as much longer, whereas, you know, the 4 hour feature was just Twitter integration. Mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean? All right. When you look at it, like, oh, I got to use OAuth, that's going to take some time to learn. Okay. Yep. My estimate is better.
So I kind of got some super high level chunks, which you would take, you would then take these chunks and chunk them down and then chunk those chunks down. Keep yeah. going until you're down. But like to an
your
hour.
Sort of big categories
your
are.
Your big categories are research and planning. Do you need to do some research and figure out what technologies are going to work best for this project? Next yeah. one, solution design, come up with a design. Or the next one is design. And then front end development yeah. is another one. That might be separated from the back end development, which is the next one. Content entry, you know, if you're selling products or you got a website, you know, you'd add those products in their descriptions. Or
are they going to do it all, or are you going to do it? Because if they're going to do it, then it doesn't affect your estimate, really.
Testing, you always have testing in here. You just always have testing in there. And then go live. You know, you're going to have some integration issues when you go to deploy and actually go on the production, so you have to yeah. do some work there. So totally. Chunk that out, and then you'll find chunks of this, and maybe in the design phase, you'll find that you need to do a Photoshop mock up, and that'll take X amount of hours. And within that, you need to do some wireframing, and mm-hmm. then so you break all that down, totally. And you go from there and go from there.
Totally. So then you get your hour estimate, which it kind of trickles up, right? You break these down into these little tiny elements that are less than whatever your set value is, right?
Mm-hmm. Add
them all together. And then multiply by your hourly rate. And then, and this is something a lot of people do, and the percentage is up to you, but we kind of recommend a 10 to 20%, add 10 to 20% time as overhead for little things that come up when you didn't research a technology or bugs, you know, yeah. like often, no one ever really sort of like estimates time for just you're going to screw up and have to fix a bug.
Right.
Right. We think we know it. We're going to program it perfect.
Exactly.
But that always happens.
Another one with two is like stock imagery. You maybe have to buy a font or some images or something like that you didn't think of. And they wanted a certain, you know, maybe you're designing for a product page and that product had a certain font. You had to buy that font or yeah. something. And you didn't think about it. That might be in there. So going yeah. under over time too. So.
Yeah. Another really good tip in here or another really good tip too is to give like a best and worst case scenario. So like best, everything goes perfect. I do everything great on yep. time. It's going to be $400.
Yep.
You know, worst case is that this could end up being a $600 project.
Yeah. Maybe.
Are you ready to take that risk?
Yeah. Good point on that. If you, you know, go over time a lot, you have a
Yeah, you need to sort of have that sort of delegated out too, like contingencies. What happens? Like some people, you know, a lot of times people just sort of bid jobs at a certain level. But if you want to do it the sort of estimate way, you should say, okay, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to report how many hours I've worked? Are you on my issue tracker so you can see that, you know, I've already spent, you know, 40 hours and I only have 20% of the functionality done? Well, that way you can just say, hey, stop working at, you know, this feature and we'll continue later when I have more money, or maybe we need to reevaluate it at that point or something.
So the best tip is always, you know, practice makes perfect. The more of these you're going to do, the better you're going to estimate on time, the better Absolutely. Specs you're going to make. Although the best thing you can do also, you know, a good tip is to save your specs and save Totally. The amount of time that you actually worked on it versus how much you estimated. And that gives you evidence for the next one, you know, Totally. It gives you some data to work with for the next estimate you give out.
Yeah, practice makes perfect. That's a great part. You really got to do it to learn it. So that wraps it up for this week of Face Off. I want to remind you guys you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Tweet us out, send an email, give us a call. We appreciate any feedback we can get. Thank you, guys. We will see you next week.